Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. I'm John Hockenberry, flying solo here on The Takeaway. We open the hour with Standing on Shaky Ground, Junior Wells' famous tune. And that's what they're doing, literally, over in L'Aquila, Italy, where the G8 are gathered and they're not making beautiful music together. The leaders meeting in Italy are trying to come to agreement on new targets for battling global warming. They're trying to find a goal of keeping the world's average temperature from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius. But perhaps the most important issue and the most divisive issue for the leaders was posed by the Indian Prime Minister, Manmohan Singh, who said that poorer countries maybe have a role in reducing climate change, but they don't want to suffer.
As responsible members of the international community, we recognize our obligation to preserve and protect our environment. But climate change cannot be addressed by perpetuating the poverty of the developing countries.
Similar sentiments have been expressed by China and Brazil. India, China, and Brazil are not members of the G8, but they are at the summit. Joining us now, continuing with us now, is Richard Gowan, Associate Director at New York University's Center on International Cooperation. This is an interesting divide. The G8, and particularly China and the United States, that's another group, and then this China-Brazil-India group. The disagreement among these various groups is proving to be pretty difficult, wouldn't you say, Richard?
But it's entirely predictable because it comes down to the simplest thing in politics, which is who pays. The question is, are developed countries going to take on the burden of paying for dealing with climate change? Or can some of that cost be moved on to developing economies like India, which are, as their economies grow, creating huge amounts of carbon emissions? The G8 Western countries say we're prepared to cut our carbon emissions by 80% by 2050. But we want the developing countries to cut their emissions by 50%. Now, that sounds like a good deal, but the developing countries say no. In terms of our efforts to end poverty, in terms of our efforts to become rich Western-style countries, those things aren't compatible, and you're asking us to pay the price for your development in the past.
Yet, Richard, they're not just saying no in these countries. They're also saying quite specifically to Barack Obama, well, hey, look at your climate bill in Congress. It's not even remotely as ambitious as what you're suggesting here at the G8 summit.
Everyone is playing to domestic audiences, but I don't think you should underestimate the extent to which people are seized of the fact that President Obama wants some progress on this issue. And you've got to remember that this is a very, very elongated process. There's another summit bringing together all the world's leaders on climate change here in New York in September that's going to be convened by the UN. And then at the very end of the year, there's a summit in Copenhagen, which is where all these deals are meant to be wrapped up. Now, if you're the Indians, or you're the French, or you're the Americans, you're not going to show all your cards now. You're not going to do all the deal-making now, because you've got another 6 months of negotiations ahead of you. So right now, everyone is posturing, everything's pretty declaratory. What they're actually talking about is keeping temperatures at 2% higher, 2 degrees Celsius higher, than they were before the Industrial Revolution, which is before the United States existed.
Right.
That's an astonishing declaratory goal, but it's not the hard stuff of negotiation. The hard stuff of negotiation is coming later in the year.
Well, the hard stuff, and what I want to talk about in just a moment, is whether there is enough international governance infrastructure to actually make this work. You've got the G8, you've got the United Nations, and you've got other international governance bodies. I want to talk about that in a moment. Richard Gowan is Associate Director at New York University's Center on International Cooperation. He's going to stay with us. But joining us now from L'Aquila, Italy, is Peter Baker, our partner of the New York Times. He's the correspondent there covering the G8 summit. Good morning, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. And it seems to me that while it's all friendly and smiles there, there's not a lot of agreement in L'Aquila. What would you say the track record is of points of common ground at this point?
Well, you know, these G8 summits are filled with lots of pre-cooked statements on things that nobody would disagree with, right? They'd like to see Middle East peace. They'd like to not have nuclear weapons spread everywhere. They'd like better health around the world. But the real point of contention this summit so far has been on climate change. What is the solution to the emissions of these greenhouse gases around the world. And the big divide is between the industrial countries like the United States, England, France, and so forth, and the developing countries like China, India, Brazil. And yesterday and today, the developing countries said, well, we agree climate change is a problem. We agree we're going to try to do something about it. We don't agree with the specific targets that you want to impose on us.
Well, Peter, is that an argument to make the G8 the G11, to bring Brazil, India, and China into it? Or is it more of an argument to create something new called the C4, Climate 4? And I use that C4 analogy deliberately. It's also the name of a plastic explosive. To have the United States, China, Brazil, and India together in some group on their own.
Yeah, you could have the C4, you could have the B8, you could have the G, you know, the Z12. I mean, the thing is that these sort of distinctions are increasingly irrelevant. I think the G8 these days is more and more marginalized compared to, let's say, the G20. That's the larger group that met in London in April, talked about the world recession, and then we'll meet again in Pittsburgh in September. Because of the broader group, that it does include influential powers like China and India that are not members of the G8, it may be increasingly the wave of the future.
All right, well, I want to stay on the line with us, Peter Baker from The New York Times, who's in L'Aquila, Italy, live for us. I want to get a sense of what's happening today and tomorrow. But first, Richard Gowan here, Associate Director at New York University Center on International Cooperation. Peter really raises the central point, and that is whether we're talking G8, G20, the entire General Assembly, or the Security Council, is there a governing institution in world government right now capable of mediating the tough challenges of climate change that involve money, security, and domestic economies?
There is no single institution that can do that, and for the reasons that Peter was saying, the G8 is actually pretty badly placed to do that. It's especially badly placed to do that because Italy, as the chair, has been really very incompetent in putting this summit together. The Italian diplomatic service, Silvio Berlusconi, who has his personal problems, have made a bit of a hash of getting this summit together. But what happened when the US realized that there were problems on the horizon, the US stepped in, and actually it's been Washington that's been driving the agenda in Italy, not only on climate change, but also on food security, which is something they'll discuss tomorrow. And at the end of the day, it's not about the number of institutions or the shape of the institutions, it's about will big powers agree? And the first thing you need to get any sort of agreement still, despite the fact that the US is not the superpower it seemed to be 10 years ago, is U.S. momentum, and we have that for the first time in a decade.
Peter Baker, before we go, Barack Obama didn't appear to have a whole lot of clout in Moscow earlier in the week. He's been received around the world as a rock star in his various foreign appearances since inauguration. What do you make of his clout at this G8 summit in L'Aquila?
Well, I think he has a good deal of sway here. He's the new kid on the block compared to the other leaders. But on the other hand, they recognize that he is coming in with a mandate from the American public and that he is closer to them, both in tone and in substance and a lot of the things that they care about. The other thing, though, that's important to remember is that that initial burst of enthusiasm for Obama, the rock star kind of reception, I think is beginning to give way a little bit to the old and enduring truth that American interests are not always the same as other countries' interests, and they're just not necessarily the same as America's. And that's going to be true whether it's a Democrat in the White House or a Republican in the White House. I mean, in the end, for instance, America is still looking to build this missile defense system in Eastern Europe that is a big problem with Russia. Obama has not abandoned that.
Right.
He is reviewing it. But he cares very much about stopping Iran from having a nuclear weapon. He cares, obviously, has to worry about North Korea having nuclear weapons. He supports both Israel and a Palestinian state. A lot of these things are somewhat consistent, pretty consistent, actually, with the second term of President Bush and a lot of previous presidents. And I think that those, you know, he would like Europeans, for instance, to send more troops to Afghanistan. They still don't want to do that. That hasn't changed just because they like Obama better.
Well, and those are the subjects of bilateral discussions that will no doubt be taking place today. Peter, before we go, we assembled a band of the G8. You didn't hear it at the top of the hour. We had Barack Obama playing bass. Would you agree with that? I'd say bass.
He has a Yeah, I think he has a good bass.
What about Angela Merkel? Angela Merkel on drums, right?
Angela Merkel on drums.
Sarkozy guitar.
Yeah. I want to hear Berlusconi sing.
All right, let's do that. Peter Baker, New York Times correspondent, L'Aquila, Italy, covering the G8 Live. Also, Richard Gowan, associate director at New York University's Center on International Cooperation. We're on solid ground. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.